Episode 2, Introduction to Rome.
If you've ever been shot at in Sicily, dined by the water's edge on the sun-drenched Isle of Capri, done business on the strangest of Italian towns, been banged up in Rome's infamous jail, wept at a much-loved matriarch's funeral, and been marched out of St. Peter's by the Swiss Guard. If you've ever savored the brilliance and diversity of Italian cuisine, been overwhelmed by their art and architecture, sold 10,000 rugby shirts to Italian fashion houses, and finally, grammatically escaped from using the infinitive and arrived at the conditional, then there is most certainly an intriguing tale to be told. You're listening to Italia 77.
At this point in time, the United States ends its 8-year involvement in the Vietnam War after the signing of the Paris Peace Accords. In the United Kingdom, the average price of a house is £9,139. A television set costs £80 and a pint of beer 20 pence. The racehorse Red Rum wins his first Grand National at Aintree.
Our intrepid soldiers of fortune have returned to Rome to begin their mission. Acclimatization is the name of our game. JRH will now take you through our initial introduction to the Eternal City.
The club has arranged for us to stay at a hotel near Parioli, as we're needing to find an apartment, transportation, and also begin to plot the pre-season training program. The location of the hotel is strategic. It is close to Pepe's apartment, close to an athletics track, and also close to the rugby pitches at Acquasciatosa. However, more importantly, it is close to the Agnini Club, or to give it its full title, Circolo Canottieri Agnini. It is a spectacular and exclusive club on the banks of the Tiber, which just happens to be the home base of the directors of Rugby Roma. You couldn't quite say it was a Roman version of London's gentlemen's clubs, such as White's or Boodle's. It wasn't. It was far and away more spacious, with many more facilities. It was the social focal point of Rome's old established families, successful business people, and men of respect and power. It was so continentally stylish that it was beyond our immediate comprehension. Seeing some of the members, it became clear that it wasn't just the women who carried handbags. It was our first introduction to the man bag. Anything to avoid spoiling the immaculate trouser line. Now, we were just about coming to terms with no socks, suntanned ankles and suede loafers. But a handbag for a bloke was, at first acquaintance, one step too far for us. Male vanity has certainly come into play these last few days, and it would be interesting to see how this trait will fit into our new world of rugby. The River Agnini meets the northern part of the River Tiber nearby, but the club actually stands on the bank of the Tiber itself. It is shrouded by weeping willow trees, umbrella pines, and an array of classic Roman cypress trees. The club is of significant status in Roman society, and having been established in 1892 as a rowing club, it has a rich tradition of international competition and individual Olympic success. Over the years, it has acquired a different ethos to, let's say, the Leander Club at Henley. It provides its members who live in the wonderful sunny climate of Rome with umpteen tennis courts, swimming pools, volleyball courts, a gym, five-a-side football pitches, bridge and card rooms, and spas. Importantly, it has the most wonderful indoor and outdoor restaurants, bars, and terraces overlooking the Tiber. And all of this within the close proximity of the historic centre of Rome. Why am I telling you this? Because we are about to use this as our base for the next 4 weeks. From the club, we would privately train on the nearby athletics track, eat breakfast, lunch, drink aperitivos, and meet up with the directors and never pay a penny. We signed for everything and the tab was picked up by the rugby club. Let me tell you that all of this was just a spectacular scenario beyond anything we could ever have imagined. The Coliseum stands before us in the late afternoon. We didn't really know what to expect, but it didn't disappoint. I knew it was the greatest amphitheatre in the Roman Empire, but it was freestanding and not built into the hillsides like the earlier Greek theatres. Amazing to think about the mock sea battles and gladiatorial contests that had taken place there. But there was something unnerving about it. Maybe it was because of all the violence that the place had seen and the ghosts of the past. But possibly it was the feeling that we are all just specks of life in the great universal scheme of things. Anyway, the Forum was no less impressive, though I must say I was mildly disappointed in the sense that I was expecting more restored buildings, along with a Roman senator in a toga pontificating from a scroll. But nevertheless, even the ruins of temples, columns and statues could not fail to evoke the distant Roman past. The Forum lies between the Palatine Hill, from where the patricians would gaze down their Roman noses at the plebs beneath, and the Capitoline Hill, which is the smallest, but perhaps the most significant of the seven hills of Rome. The Capitoline was the political and religious heart of Rome, and was built on in the 6th century BC by the first Etruscan king of Rome. What I liked the most was the masterfully designed Piazza del Campidoglio, the place of the bell tower, which is a perfectly symmetrical square designed centuries later by Michelangelo. Alongside the Capitoline Hill and looking down on Piazza Venezia is the Monumento Nazionale a Vittorio Emanuele II, commonly known as the wedding cake. Whilst it elaborately mimics an ancient Roman monument, it was actually built in 1885 as a tribute to the first king of a united Italy. The monument also houses the tomb of Italy's unknown soldier. We spot other tourists, but suddenly it occurs to us that we are not tourists anymore. The tourists are pointing to a balcony on one side of Piazza Venezia, from where Mussolini made his impassioned speeches to a packed piazza, only for he and his mistress to end up executed and strung up from a lamppost in Milan towards the end of the Second World War. A stark reminder of Italy's darker side. Attention on deck! A few days later, Piero Marini, one of the club's directors, is taking us to have dinner with the famous Roman boulevardier Bubi Farinelli, and of course Pepe, and our newly discovered Presidente. Piero, for some reason, makes the cab stop at a specific point, and we walk through the ancient cobbled streets. We've never really been in the city centre. There are vehicles parked in tiny streets, streets that are so narrow that it seemed impossible that cars might even enter. Motorinos whiz by. There are old walls incorporated into modern structures, graffiti, the odd ancient fountain, elegant stores and shop windows merging into the relics of the past. It is dark and the air is still warm with the smell of hot baked dough from pizzerias and salumeria from alimentari, delicatessens. The cobbled streets, in some places, perhaps 2,000 years old. But this is the centre of Rome, and it is a million miles away from Times Square or Piccadilly Circus. A modern city merged into its historic past, and it is absolutely mesmerising. We turn out of a side street, and it hits us like an avalanche of light, an oasis of showmanship and spectacle. It's the Trevi Fountain. We glance at Piero and see on his face a childlike grin that he has pulled off his unannounced trick. A smile that also reflects our enthusiastic response. Trevi is the largest Baroque fountain in the city and one of the most famous fountains in the world. Tossing one coin into the fountain ensures a return trip to Rome. Two coins are for those seeking love. Three coins symbolise wedding bells. Interestingly enough, Ian throws two coins into the water. Serendipitous or what? Piero has a plan. Rome by night. A walk via a few of the iconic sites, but done at night time to accentuate the experience. We stroll past the impressive Italian Parliament building, and then we are blindsided again. In all its glory is a floodlit Pantheon. We can't take it anymore, like a boxer being pulverised on the ropes. The Roman Pantheon is the best preserved, influential building of ancient Rome. It was a temple dedicated to all the gods of pagan Rome, but is now a Catholic church. As the brick stamps on the side of the building reveal, it was built and dedicated between AD 118 and 125. When the Pantheon was built, the only source of light was the oculus in the centre of the dome, helpful also for emitting smoke from pagan sacrificial fires. Obviously, being open to the elements means that it also rains inside the building, but a gently sloping floor takes care of drainage issues. Interestingly enough, it was the first use of concrete and the largest dome in the world until the St. Peter's version by Michelangelo overtook it. Just when we thought we couldn't take any more, we drift into Piazza Navona. It is a dramatic oblong piazza and is famous among artists and tourists. It is very popular not only because of its picturesque appearance, but also its fountains, palaces, churches, cafes and the restaurants that surround it. Just to keep you informed, the feast went like this. Italian cantaloupe melon is an emperor in the melon world, and its combination with Parma ham is a world-class starter. So we are most certainly off to a good start. Everyone orders the same pasta, something that we find happens often when Italians are in a large group. Tonight it is bucatini all'amatriciana. Amatriciana is perhaps the most well-known of Roman dishes. It is made with the cheek of the pig, guanciale, not bacon. Guanciale has a fair bit of fat on it, but it is good fat, has tremendous flavour, and served with tomato sauce, passata, is a main component. But never use fresh tomatoes. Then dried chilli or lots of black pepper are sometimes added for background heat. However, the key ingredient to this concoction is cheese, in this case Pecorino Romano, a distinctly strong local sheep's cheese, which is added to the sauce, but most definitely not Parmesan. So, you're waiting to hear what is the main course. Conversation is now interrupted. Clapping! And then glazing of the eyes. Here comes the abbacchio ascottadito. This is baby lamb, and in Italian, the word scottadito means burnt finger. This dish is named scottadito because the lamb chops are so delicious that you can't resist eating them sizzling hot, straight from the grill, and burning your fingers. I'm beginning to think that despite the UK's attempts at haute cuisine, we have, in fact, been living in a culinary wilderness. Oh, by the way, drink was most certainly taken.
Italia 77 was devised, written and introduced by me, Ian McAllister, and read by Richard Greenwood, who also contributed to the writing. It was recorded and produced by Tom Allam and Nigel Heath at La Cucina Studios, London, and edited by Stu Smith, Nigel Heath, and Jamie Allen. If you've enjoyed the show, please hit the like button, subscribe, and consider leaving a review. Italia 77 is a Zacuti production. Be sure to keep listening. There's plenty more adventures to come.